Mormon Stories Podcast takes a ton of work and depends solely upon listener support. To keep this program alive, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org. Okay, I'm going to just, there's some little healthy tips and tricks along the way that have been helpful for a lot of people. Instead of like trying to delve in each one, I'm going to rifle through them. And then at the end, I would like you to ask questions or bring stuff up that you want to talk about. But this is not going to be giving any of them their due treatment, but I want to just file them in your brain and then let you decide what you want to talk about. It is absolutely unavoidable that if you have a crisis of faith, you're probably going to feel some anger or resentment, or you're going to grieve the Garden of Eden that you were once in. And I would just say that grieving is not only okay, it's healthy. And that anger is also probably unavoidable and probably healthy and even justified. But it's also good to try and then figure out how to move beyond the anger once you can. Go slowly is some fantastic advice that I first learned on the New Order Mormon website. There's no hurry as you're working through this journey. Don't do an Al Pacino Scarface, you know, take everyone down with you, burn the bridges and, you know... there's no need for any of that. Write your letter to everyone and mail it to them and their children. And, you know, you may decide that you want to get to that point at place at some point, but there's no rush. So take everything slowly. Find meaning in the journey. There's a lot of beauty. I mean, just the friends that I've made, and many of those friends are here, just the friends that I've made through this journey... if I died today, I would feel like I was the luckiest man on earth. And that's just the friends that I've made, let alone all the other good things that have happened. And when you meet someone who's been through a crisis like you have, you almost sometimes have a friend for life in deep ways that you could have never arrived at through 40 years of lunches at a lunch sandwich shop. So there are all sorts of beautiful parts of this journey, if you're willing to see it. For people who feel like they need to move on, I really liked what Richard Dutcher once wrote as he was struggling in his journey. He said, I'm basically leaving Mormon filmmaking for now, and I'm not going to comment on whatever his personal faith journey was relative to the church, but he likened it unto this boat. Imagine this land of just peril and danger and sadness or whatever. Or, you know, imagine this place where without a lot of structure and support and guidance, you can be eaten alive. And I kind of think that the world can be that kind of place. Like there's a lot worse places you could be than growing up in a really good solid LDS ward with a good solid LDS family. That structure, even if now you find it lacking, has created a lot of incredibly beautiful, talented, amazing, wonderful people. And so you can kind of almost look at your church experience as this boat that got you from a place where you could have faced a lot of peril across a river to a place where now you have a new set of adventures and opportunities for further enlightenment and joy. And it was kind of that boat that got you across that river away from a place that may have been a lot more perilous. And you certainly don't necessarily feel like you need to now that you don't want to stay on the boat anymore, now that you're ready to go take this adventure on this new land, the need to destroy that boat or disparage it or mock the people who are also on the boat having their own journey. And I really like that metaphor. Not to say that like those who go through a crisis of faith are more enlightened than those who never have one. It's different, but this is how I like to look at it, if that's of any help. Don't soil your own nest. You know, even birds don't make a mess in their own nest. Realize that your family relationship, your community, your neighborhood, all that's very valuable. It may be easy to dismiss when you're feeling frustrated, but don't unnecessarily spoil your relationships and your network and your friends and family and work. Try and be sensitive and realize that those relationships are valuable, and sometimes we treat them carelessly to our own peril, and I've certainly done that. Complementary to that is don't burn bridges. There's just never a need to make enemies. And I think that's a good guideline. I think it's really important to be careful who you talk to about this kind of stuff. There are many bishops who will never understand. In fact, the last few bishops I've had who have said, you're doing something weird on the internet. What's that thing you're doing? You know, I'm like, okay, do you want to have that conversation? And the last two bishops I've had have been like, actually, I don't want to have that conversation. That was awesome. Because I don't think my bishops are in a place to want to have this conversation. So it can only go one way, and that's bad. So instead, don't seek out people to, don't force your feelings and views and perspectives on people. Like, look for people who are going to be empathetic. If you have to get on the internet, there's, you know, post-Mormon, New Order Mormon, there's, you know, what are all the other websites? There's Sunstone, there's Further Light Knowledge, there's Ex-Mormon, there's Faces East, there's FAIR, the Apologetics Board, there's all these different places. Mormon Stories has a forum. Lots of places where, with privacy and with people who will understand, you can vet and brainstorm, network, get ideas, get tips and tricks, but not make people uncomfortable or destroy your relationships. And so if any of you need a place like that, I've created one on Mormon Stories called mormonstories.org/forum. You can join that, ask any question. Confidences are kept. There are other places too that I'm not even mentioning here. If any of you are interested, find that place. But don't think that it's going to be helpful to try and have this conversation with your mom or your sibling or your bishop or your neighbor or your kids if you don't have every reason to believe they're going to be advocates for you. And if most of the time, if you're a true believer in the church, you can't have this conversation. Your mind can't go there. Or your whole worldview unravels. All this hope that the afterlife has given you and all this money and time that you've invested, all of a sudden it comes up into question, was that a good decision? And you're 50 and 60, that's a heavy thing. I've raised my kids. I mean, that's just, most people aren't willing or able to go there. And don't force it. Enough said. That's what I meant by I don't hook up with an old high school girlfriend to tell your Mormon problems to if you're married, and that be the way that you handle your crisis of faith. So that's why I say constructive internet relationships. Find ones that are going to be compatible with your situation. How to talk with a bishop? There's a way to talk to the bishop that is non-threatening and that puts you in a minimally vulnerable place. So it is unavoidable that there's this bit or this switch that's flipped in terms of how you're viewed within your ward community. You're pretty much either viewed as with the program or not with the program. And people who are viewed as with the program are going to get a certain amount of respect and a certain set of callings that people who are viewed as not with the program are probably never going to get. And that is probably unavoidable once you've had a real crisis of faith, unless you're going to just live in the closet. If you're going to be in any way open or try and be authentic, you have to get used to the fact that you'll probably never be young men's president, young women's president, unless you live in the mission field where they're desperate to get anybody. And then all sorts of things are possible. But if you live along this corridor here, you know, there are certain callings you're never going to get. And so so if you can get comfortable with that fact, that you're always going to be viewed with a little bit of suspicion in your ward, then there's a way to have a constructive conversation with the bishop that's minimally revealing. And it goes something like this. Bishop, I love the church. It's awesome. You're awesome. Everything's wonderful. This is the most incredible thing I've ever been a part of. But I'm working through a few things right now. Totally non-threatening. Doesn't make him think, oh, I have to worry about him. He's going to, you know... It's just like, oh, well, he's struggling. Oh, yeah, let's give him some space. And you just say, yeah, I'm just kind of struggling with some things. I need a little space. before you like come to me thinking that I'm going to accept a calling, you may need to kind of just ask me first if I think it's a good fit. Maybe I'll tell you now, there's certain callings that would really work for me. Nursery's awesome. Activity committee, absolutely. Emergency preparedness, I'm there. Home teacher, maybe, but ward missionary leader, may not be able to do that one. A gospel doctrine teacher, I probably should stay away from that. And you can kind of, if you want to even go that, but you don't even need to go there. You can just keep it as simple as, I'm working through some things right now. I need a little time. I don't really want to go into it. You don't have to worry. I'm not going to try and infect other people. There's no sin I've committed. I'm not an adulterer. I'm not into pornography. I'm totally living in harmony with how I feel God wants me to live. But I just need a little space. And I may be a little picky about my callings. That's all you need to say. And yeah, there are going to be some implications. But as long as you're non-threatening, there are people like that all over wards who don't even have crises of faith, who are just, I'm too busy, my kids are giving me too much trouble, I'm sick. I mean, there are people like that all over the ward. So you just become this category of person. But then if you're non-threatening and constructively engaging in your ward, you can have a nice relationship if that's what you want to have. So that's a high-level view on how to talk to your bishop. Coming out to the family is just really tricky. There's just no good way to talk to a devout believing member about a crisis of faith. There's just no good way to do it. So in some ways, that same conversation I just mentioned about with the bishop is one way you can approach your family. Very non-threatening. Don't try and talk to them about Fanny Alger. Just say, I'm struggling, but I think you guys are awesome and I love the church. And unless you get to the point where you feel like it's Les Miserables time and I need to raise that flag and I'm going to go down with the ship and I need to be a person of integrity and I'm going to lay it all on the line. I think there's a lot of integrity and honor about someone who feels like that's what they need to do. It likely is going to come at a high cost and a high price, but every one of us has our own journey. And the jails in Selma, Alabama had to be filled before the police started listening to the protesters, So there's some extent to which, just like when Harvey Milk hands the phone to those young gay men in the movie Milk and says, when they know one of us, they vote for us 2-1. Every time one of us comes out, we create more space and tolerance and empathy for those coming down the road later. So I think there is some virtue in tactfully and respectfully at some point being open and authentic. But everybody's got to make that call of when it's going to be healthy and constructive for them versus destructive for their own relationships. And I don't have any magic secret sauce there, but I think that it needs to be navigated respectfully and carefully. A lot of people like to write these big long letters, 6 pages of every single historical problem they've had and all the problems they have with the church. Again, I put that in the same category as what I said before. Sometimes that's awesome and candid. Sometimes that's just, it's like running up to a little child and telling him the Santa doesn't exist. I mean, who would do that? I mean, what's the positive benefit of like raining on people's parade or making them doubt something that they love and appreciate? So everyone's got to make this call, but I don't necessarily like put that out as something I think everyone should do all the time. Look at things as a blessing. Don't throw away the good. Don't throw away the baby with the bathwater as you're going through your crisis. I like this idea of trading up. If you're going to like stop going to church, don't just like sit and watch TV during that time. Maybe, unless it's some awesome TV, but like maybe find a way to volunteer. Find a way to enrich your life spiritually in other ways. Make lunch for the family or dinner so that when they come home, your wife or your husband didn't have to help with that. Like, find a way for every, if you take away the Book of Mormon and the scriptures, replace it with Eckhart Tolle or with some other spiritual thing, something that feeds you. If you stop serving in the church, find nonprofit or charitable organizations that you do care about and serve there. But always try and trade up instead of like trade down. Because if you're going to leave the church and then just be this bitter, bitter, miserable, horrible person who's unpleasant and no one likes to be around you and your life's a wreck, what's the point? I mean, yeah, it was authentic, but it was an authentic mess is what it ended up being. So someone wrote, find a constructive hobby. I think that's a great suggestion. A lot of times, a traditional LDS life doesn't leave much room for hobbies. And that's a great way to direct your efforts. I've already talked about the parallels on being gay and losing one's faith. Carolyn Pearson, I the biggest question I got for Carolyn Pearson was, how can you stay in the church after all you've seen and suffered and experienced? And she said, I can stay in the church because I'm out of all my closets. And I think that's really a powerful thing. I think that, I mean, Mom's right. There is such thing as too much information. And everyone doesn't need to know everything about you all the time. But, like, there is something to be said about just living a genuine, sincere, honest life. And I like this idea of, for the important closets, that we get to a place where we can be authentic with those around us. That almost never in the long run backfires. It almost always in the long run helps others, helps you, brings everybody more joy. If you're constructive in how you come out of your closet. And let's have a comment.
I just really feel it necessary to interject on the Carolyn Pearson, the out of all of her closets, because I did spend 3 days at her retreat this last weekend or whatever. And she did qualify that very strongly with her notoriety, her celebrity status does help tremendously with that. She is afforded a certain protection that the average person would not be.
It's true. Thank you. The option of leaving the church completely is an interesting one. As I mentioned before, I do not buy into the fear, uncertainty, and doubt that, like, your children will become pedophiles and drug addicts when you leave the church. Anybody who's around the Draper, Sandy, Salt Lake area knows that there are plenty of drug addicts in the high schools, in the churches, along this corridor. And sometimes it seems like, in my anecdotal experience, the more orthodox the parents are, the more of a guarantee that the kids are going to leave the church in the end, not the opposite. So to think that, like, raising your kids in the church means that they're going to remain Mormon. 2/3 of all members of the church go inactive or leave it. 2/3. So, I mean, inactivity is the norm. So if you think you're going to raise your kids and that they're guaranteed going to be Mormon if you raise them in the Mormon church, you're kidding yourself, especially the 20-somethings. I've heard that inactivity rates among people in their 20s right now in America is extremely high. And I think this gay homosexuality issue is really driving a wedge between the younger generations and the older generations. But so I don't believe in this doubt and scariness. I don't believe that people should live in fear or in the closet because they're scared of what might happen if they leave the church. But I am not going to ever say that leaving the church guarantees you a wonderful, rewarding, fulfilling life. I don't think that's true at all. I think the church has succeeded as tremendously as it has because in aggregation, it has a very compelling package to offer people and especially families in terms of identity, support, values, happiness. If you fit within the profile of the average member, it can be a fabulous experience that is unparalleled in terms of what you could assemble for yourself. And that's why I like this analogy of homeschooling. If you're going to, there are people who homeschool kids who go on to be National Merit Scholars and whatever, right? But I mean, if the average parent would try to put together what a really good public school can provide, that fantastic physics professor that can get a kid excited about physics like none other, that English professor that really knows the literature and can make you feel the poetry, that wonderful experience on an athletic team where you can be that star basketball player or football player, you know, whatever that experience is, like a really good public or private school experience is almost impossible to duplicate by just two parents who have full-time jobs and raising other kids. And I don't want to totally over-offer that analogy, but like to just pull your whole kids out and yourself and say, well, we're going to provide and supplement for our kids what the church used to. That's a tall order. The identity, the set of morals and values, the community, the structure, the support. When your kids in their teen years think you're stupid, who's going to help support them when you've taken away their supplemental support structure? In the church, you've got other leaders that they may be willing to listen to when they think you're full of it. And so, like, all I can say is, like, it's a non-trivial matter to just say, I'm packing up and we're going to go find happiness. A lot of people spend a lot of years really struggling to replace and to trade up what they gave up. And I think that's why so many people often stay. Having said that, I absolutely know people who have done it, and they've raised fantastic children that are contributing, happy members of society. I've got a couple of people I want to interview for my podcast who I can offer as people to emulate and to model. So I'm just going to say it's a non-trivial matter, and it's something you want to think about and take in a way that's measured. A lot of people try and find joy in other churches. Some have been successful, some haven't. I went through a phase where I went to the Unitarian Church for a while. I went to the Episcopalian Church thinking that they're gay-friendly, that they're more liberal. And it may be just conditioning, but I'm just so Mormon to the bone that nothing touches me like Come Ye Saints or Abide With Me, although it's not a Mormon hymn, or, you know, whatever. My spiritual language is Mormonism, and I'll never be able to shake that, I don't think. So for me, it's either this church or probably no church. And so, but other people have been able to find success there in churches, and so I don't want to shut that off for you, but for me, that hasn't worked out so well. This is a psychological point that's really rooted in the things I'm studying in psychology. But I think we overvalue words and ideas and language. I think that oftentimes we think that we can use the word cult, or we can use the word deceived, or we can use the term fraud, or we can use the term oppressive. And we can really become invested in some of these notions about what the church is or isn't, or what our experience is or isn't. And I don't know that that's always constructive. I don't think that every thought or feeling that the brain generates should be believed and obeyed. And so don't let words and ideas and history and language and some feelings be the master of your decisions. Try and step back from a lot of the turmoil that's going on in your head and see if you can dig in and tap into a deeper place to guide your decisions and your ultimate destinations. I'm speaking very nebulously here. If you've read any of the works of like Eckhart Tolle, or if you've studied Buddhism at all, there's a real value in consciousness and contact with the present moment and awareness and meditation. There isn't this hippie thing where you're burning incense and saying om. It's like realizing that there's a you that's behind the thoughts and feelings that are racing through your body. And there's a deeper truth and compass that you can tap into to orient the decisions you make that's probably safer and more constructive than believing some of the words and ideas and notions and labels that sometimes we get an affinity for. I know I'm speaking very hippie nebulous here, but I hope I've connected with some of you. If not, we can talk later. If you're going to decide that the church's value system is no longer your own value system, don't stop there. Build back up what your value system is. Don't be defined by what you're not is in relationship to the Mormon church. Decide what your values are, and then actively and proactively pursue them. And nothing, if you're going to believe that you need to leave the church, if you're going to believe that that's the authentic, true thing to do, model a lifestyle that is worthy of emulation and that speaks of itself in terms of the goodness and truth that you're putting forth to the world. Don't have your post-church experience be that you're this bitter, angry, unpleasant person. Have it be that you're more Christian than most of the Christians out there, even if you don't believe in Christ. And that's much more of a testament to whatever you believe people should do and follow than your intellectual arguments or dissent that you might be able to put forward to people. I think that the real enemies, there's a lot of this, who's in the church and who's out of it, and true believers and non-believers. And a lot of times we get caught up in thinking that the enemy is either the church or the enemies to the church. But I don't buy into that anymore. I think that the enemies on both sides are hate, fear, and intolerance. And I think that former Mormons can sometimes have as much hate, fear, and intolerance, as liberal and as progressive as they think they are, as the most dogmatic and orthodox religious person. And I've, experienced that personally myself. And so I don't think that the church is the enemy. I don't think that anti-Mormons are the enemy or ex-Mormons are the enemy. I think the enemies are hate, fear, and intolerance and lack of empathy. And so regardless of where you end up, I would challenge you and I would challenge myself to build love and tolerance and empathy for people as your primary value or one of your primary values, regardless of where you are in relationship to the church. What time is it? Is it noon? Okay. Well, I'm happy. Well, how many of you are staying for the afternoon session? Oh, you go 12:30? Awesome. Okay. Then I'm ready for more questions and thoughts. I've made it through my long list of slides. Was that helpful?
Very good.
Okay.
Very profound.
Okay, good. Good. Thank you. Okay, more questions, comments.
You mentioned Richard Dutcher's boat analogy, and you mentioned the importance of not getting to the other shore and turning and mocking those who are still in the boat. But one thing I recall that he mentioned was that it can become burdensome, counterproductive, and even unbearable to continue to carry the boat once you've reached that other shore. And that's a tough place to be when you feel like you're kind of being forced to continue to carry that boat.
Forced by just
the culture.
The pressures. Oh, yeah. I tried to say that being that white-knuckling, closeted, grin-and-bear-it, silent person is one of the toughest places to be. And I just want to go on record. One of the people in this audience was very instrumental in helping me come to this place of understanding, but I used to be pretty hard on people who left the church. I used to be pretty critical of them. I used to always dismiss them as bitter and angry and discontent and unenlightened. And a good friend who's here was able to sit down with me at a restaurant once and explain to me why, for them, leaving the church was the only way that they were going to become whole again. And it was through that experience where I realized that some people will have to leave the church to find wholeness. And staying is a recipe for continued sadness and mental illness. And so I just want to go on the record that for people who feel like they need to leave, there's no shame, there's no inferiority, there's no inadequacy. It's an act often of courage and of conviction, and I think I've seen it work out really well for a lot of people. So I just have to say that. Okay. I don't know if I answered your question, but I agree it's a horrible thing.
I don't even know if it's a question as much as it's just a real tough place.
It is.
My question's about just, there's so many things I want to introduce the question, but I want to talk about, sharing with other people, because for me, it's been such a great experience. I've always been a questioner. I've always tried to figure out the whole world in my mind, and to finally have the answers, not the way I expected, which is fine, but it was just like, oh, everything makes sense, and I feel so much better now, and I'm still finding this middle way and these kinds of things, and maybe it's the missionary spirit in me, but it's like I want to share these things with people. And I understand, like, there's so many people that I can count on one hand the people I've actually talked to about it. And so And one guy was someone that left the church, and I thought, you know, I'm going to help this guy find peace. And then we got talking about it. I haven't followed up with him, but then I found out that he still goes to church with his kids, and I'm like, oh, no, I hope I didn't, like, ruin that for him. And so, like, there's a girl on my ward, and we went to dinner the other night, and I was just thinking, like, and she, I knew her story because she was a convert, and her, and I don't know, I want to get some other people's insights on this, but I mean, she was a convert, and her family is Methodist, and they live back east, and she's the only one that's a member, and I was just thinking, and I started asking her questions. I was like, so are you happy being a member of the church? And she's like, no one's ever asked me that before. Or like, I was kind of asking her questions like, is your life better? Like, are you happy? Are you like, and I don't know that she had the perspective to kind of look at that, you know, from my perspective, because she's a true believer. And so I almost wanted, and like, I know her parents wanted her to come home and just, you know, all of these things, and I didn't talk to her about it at that time, but I don't know, I just wanted to hear about what other people's experiences have been with sharing to people that they think have either left the church to help them find peace once they've left, to know the truth, all of, you know.
Wayne. Oh, wait, yeah.
Kind of two thoughts along kind of my experience with that. I had a sibling kind of go through, you know, this journey a few years before me, and I remember them trying to talk to me about it, and to your comment on perspective, I did not have the perspective to even have that conversation with them. I remember them sincerely saying, you know, I don't understand why, you know, repentance, I have to go to, you know, a bishop who is practically a stranger and explain these things. And I remember kind of parroting back everything that I had been taught. Well, they're there to help you through the process and to help ensure that, you know, that you have fully repented of all your sins, and therefore, and I look back now, and I've kind of brought that into my experience going, if that person isn't in a place where they can even kind of understand or have a perspective, I found it to kind of be a waste of time a little bit. And also, secondly, you know, I look at, you know, my parents and, you know, the Great Rock that the church has been for them and even for me. And I wouldn't want to take that away from them at all. You know, I was really lucky that my kind of transition was, I mean, shockingly kind of easy. I mean, not easy. There's obviously societal and familial challenges, but, you know, I think with other, you know, family members having kind of gone through it with Mormon stories and other things, it helped me not hit kind of stage four like a brick wall. It helped me kind of go through it. And obviously there's frustrations and other challenges, but I never experienced the anger or some of the other things. Obvious frustrations, you know, big thing to experience. But my two things were, I wouldn't want to take that away from people, even though I'm excited, I'm interested about it. And second, having been there, I mean, them speaking to me about it, you know, it fell on deaf ears. So,
thank you.
Yeah, I think it's, I like your point very much, that you can't go out and indiscriminately broadcast all of your doubts. I mean, you got to realize that if for a large percentage of the members of the church, if the president of the church or Joseph Smith stood up and said, "Hey, the whole thing's a fraud," a lot of members of the church would end up in a mental institution, that they can't cope with that. And you have to realize that there are some people who are totally emotionally involved in the church, and if you come and burst their bubble, they can't cope with it. So you have to be discriminating in who you discuss your doubts and reservations with. And I'll just make one more point. probably other people are familiar with the story of Thomas Ferguson. He was a lawyer. He wrote a he wrote a book on archaeology in the Book of Mormon, and then he found out about the Book of Abraham, and he totally lost his faith in the Mormon Church. But he continued to go to church and live an Orthodox Mormon lifestyle. And he said, you know, there's no point in trying to destroy the Mormon Church. It's too big and too powerful. You can do it if you wanted to. So he said, run with things that you like about it, and don't spend all your time worrying about things that you can't reconcile. And, you know, I think that's good advice.
It can be like barking at a train, trying to destroy the church. I mean,
so I appreciate all the sort of cautionary tales people are telling. I want to say something a little bit on the other side. So my family all know pretty much what I believe, and I have a brother who's, I guess he's currently in a stake presidency, but he was a bishop, and he was interviewing people, and, you know, somebody would start raising really, really hard questions, and he would ask me when I would come visit him to go talk with those people, because he knew that I'd encountered every question they had, and so you can be a little bit of a light and a help, and by some people knowing, the right people knowing who you do trust, you can be in a position to be helpful. Also, you know, I spoke to my bishop and I told him, here's what I think about the Book of Mormon, and if I teach seminary, I'll never say it. Okay, this is how I teach about it, and this is how I feel about it, and I don't feel a conflict between those two things. I mean, I can talk about Nephi and people go like, they think I know him, you know, he's my best friend or something like that, or Amulek, and I don't need to go into details about what I actually believe right now, but So I did, you know, I've talked to my bishops, and they know exactly what I am, and I'm still getting pretty darn good callings. But I live in California, in Northern
the Bay
California.
Area.
In Northern California, yes.
One of the two best places to live for a person like you in the entire world.
I think your advice about going slowly applies to talking to other people, too, about your feelings. You can say something and kind of feel out how they're going to respond to you and just kind of go from there.
Thank you.
Just to follow up to what I was saying, I mean, I guess the reason why I kind of brought that up was, and I guess it's a personal journey I've decided, but I guess one of the first things I came to is I was just like, why didn't anybody tell me? Like, I wanted to know. Like, I would have loved to have had somebody come and sit down and say, this is it. Like, I don't know, just kind of explain everything like the way John does. I mean, and we don't have that ability to do that. But it just, the feeling I got was when I finally kind of figured all this out, I was just like, why didn't someone come and tell me? I wanted to know. And so, I don't know.
Yeah, that's why it's not easy. I think it can be a great act of love that people will thank you for in the right circumstances. And the only other thing I'll add, everything that Wayne said, I totally agree with and validate. But sometimes, I'll just give you an example. I was in the MTC. There was this daughter of a member of a stake presidency that I grew up in who wrote me and said, John, I'm leaving the church. I found out about the Masons in the temple, and I'm leaving. And I wrote her the riot act, and I told her that she was going to hell and she needed to repent. I just said, we're no longer friends. You're dead to me. Goodbye. Not really that bad, but I mean, that's how I felt, and I wrote her that. No, that wasn't how I did. But that planted a seed for me. And I'm not saying plant seeds of doubt. I'm saying that, like, small ways of giving little subtle invitations to have further conversations that are not hard sell but soft sell, if you ever want to talk, I'm here, can actually be plant important seeds that then when people feel ready, they germinate.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And my mind was just saying it's tough to go from a cold start. I mean, that's where it's tough, but obviously my siblings and friends' conversations, you know, those little conversation starters then made a big deal. I've just found it to be not worth it or not very effective going from a cold start, but you can, through questions and stuff, you kind of know who you can have conversations with, how you can, how deep you can go with it, for sure.
And some people will always thank you. So, you know, I get that. Let's do Julie, and then, okay. We'll work up to Natasha.
I just wanted to ask a question, just because you've worked, you know, you've talked and worked with so many people in similar positions to us. And my struggle, I think I'm through my crisis. I think, you know, I'm not angry anymore. I feel like spiritually I have a set of beliefs that feel really good to me. So I feel like I'm in a good space except for the confusion. I'm always, what do I do? Should I really stay in? Should I leave? Should I stay? Should I go 1 week at church? I come home, okay, let's move to California. Then 1 week, you know, oh, this is great. These people are nice. And I just feel like I can't decide what to do. I sometimes worry about me, you know, being Gail, sitting outside while my kids get married. I don't have a temple recommend because just with me, I'm not able to do that anymore. I kind of had to step back, although I'm active. So I think, am I setting myself up for future heartache? Am I setting myself up for my kids thinking I'm a little off? Am I making the right choice? And I just cannot, you know, even though I feel good about my beliefs and I feel good with, you know, people know enough, but not too much to where I'm still acceptable. But I don't know exactly, you know, are there people that you've seen that are in this back and forth thing that seem to ever get it? Or are they always doing what I'm doing and changing their mind every other week what to do? That's my question. What's your experience with people?
It's a great question. Thank you. I started talking a little bit about this when I talked about the opposite of a small truth is a lie, the opposite of a big truth is another big truth. This idea of paradox, of dissonance, you know, which is it, mercy or justice? Which one? You know, you're never going to solve that. You're going to have two truths staring each other in the face, and you're going to always be living in that borderland of uncertainty in navigating those two things. That's like, I see that as like the pinnacle of maturity and enlightenment, when you are able to experience the dissonance that you're feeling and find peace and comfort with it. Maybe that's going to build within you a sense of compassion and empathy for others that make you what Fowler, I think, was talking about, someone who can love a true believer and just be right there with them when they tell you how awesome the church is. And when someone says, I hate the church and I think it should burn, you say, man, I feel everything you're feeling. and you can be sincere on both sides of that. And I guess what I'm saying is you, if you try, you will not be able to pick one or the other. You will never be able to say, I'm going back into the box as a true believer. I don't think, I've almost never met maybe one or two people in my whole life. That's an unlikely situation. But if you decide you're leaving it, you don't leave it. You cannot leave Mormonism once you've been raised in it. It will always be a part of your life. You will never be able to leave it unless you kill yourself or move to someplace in India where the church hasn't gotten yet, and someday it's going to be there. You know what I mean? And you'll always have your family and friends. So, I mean, you can think you're leaving it, but you will always be Mormon. And that's why I like to tease away LDS church member from Mormon. Because you can be Mormon ethnically or culturally or, you know, in your heritage and tribe. But all I'm saying is I think people like us are going to have to face this dissonance and paradox for the rest of our lives. We will never be fully comfortable in the church, and we will never be fully comfortable out of the church. And that's just, and maybe there's a way to allow that dissonance to build within us a deeper sense of love and humanity and compassion and empathy, where we can become special people that can play in all areas. And there'll never be that peace. And yes, you may not go to that temple wedding of your daughters, but you will get some sweet experiences with people that you would have never, some experiences of authenticity and integrity that you would have never, ever been able to have when you were in the box. And so you just have to say, there's the bad, but there's the good, and try and cultivate more good, and try and just become comfortable with the uncertainty and the flexibility that the bad will sometimes present. And I know this is where I think Buddhism and Eastern philosophy is very helpful. You know, and this is why I love the book A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle, the Oprah series where Oprah interviews Eckhart Tolle, 10 chapters. It's been able to fill an important part of my spiritual view and worldview to learn to be comfortable with discomfort, basically. And so that's my lame attempt at trying to paint for you how I deal with that. I don't mean to say, sorry, you're always going to suffer. But that's what Buddha said, you know, life is suffering. Start there. If you start there, then like there's all these sort of surprises along the way if you start with life of suffering.
And I, for me, kind of where I've come to is I base my decision on, you know, what will make me the most happy. Am I going to be more happy if I feel awkward around the family all the time and there's that, or I'll be more happy if I feel like I'm being more authentic to myself, and making that decision which one ultimately is going to make me the most happy. And that's, yeah, even though there's not necessarily one that's going to make you complete.
Yep. And as long as you add to that, oftentimes what's making you happy is bringing joy to other people. It's not just about what makes you happy. It's about, I mean, part of making yourself happy is going to be bringing joy to others. Then I think that's the perfect guide, is just follow where the joy and the light is as much as you can. You know? Yes, sir.
Yes, I work in mental health in Washington State. And earlier today, you made mention of suicidal ideation for a number of people come in with these pressures related to, you know, their transition. And also, later on, you made mention of, you know, making contacts, going slow, internet, you know, contacts where you might not feel comfortable or are unable to express yourself accurately and truthfully to those around you. Are those two things connected to a certain extent? In other words, you find much more relief from talking to those people that you really want to talk to. About these kind of pressures that are going on inside. In other words, if you go, well, I'm torn between, I really want to tell my spouse, but I can't, but I'm going online, for example, and trying to express myself there. So the true contacts that should be made during that process, and I know you're trying to protect the other person. I'm not trying to batter you with my concerns, but, you know, those things that take place that are traumatic. I work with a lot of, you know, trauma patients, for example. People have gone through traumatic experience, and is that perhaps something that would relieve a person's pressure to a greater extent if they're be able to make contacts with the people they really want to?
Yeah. I mean, in my experience, like, there are some people who are just not in the position to be candid with a loved one. I've seen a spouse serve divorce papers within a month and take the kids away when somebody simply read the wrong book and started, you know, questioning things. I mean, there are a lot of stakes. People can lose jobs. I've seen incredibly contributing, wonderful people who are making all sorts of incredible differences in the world, who will be an eternal disappointment to their parents because their parents consider them and evaluate them purely by the question of whether they're a devout Orthodox member of the church. The stakes can be really high. So I've also seen people who went years thinking they were the only person in the world having these problems and questions, that there was something wrong with them. And so I found online to be a wonderful place where people can discover they're not alone, get validated, and explore things in a way, like all this stuff that I'm trying to communicate today, I didn't come up with. This is through talking to over 1,000 people. I could have never come up with all this on my own. And I'm not saying it's all that great. I hope someone does a better job than me. But like, all this stuff is now available for people that wasn't available before. And this stuff can be really helpful because it's based on the experiences of other people as they've tried and failed things. So I think online can be a wonderful place. It can also be a dangerous place where you get sucked into negatory and unpleasantries. And it can be a way to avoid having those authentic conversations with the people you really need to have those conversations with. So I'm all for coming out of the closet. I'm all for authentic relationships. Everybody's going to have to assess their situation and then decide when the right time is and the right way for them to come out to the right people. And I think that the internet can be a great way to help people do that in the right way and to time it in a way that's maximally healthy for everyone involved. But in the end, I don't think people can stay in the closet on this stuff. I don't think it's sustainable 5, 10, 20 years without doing either serious damage to your psychological well-being or a disservice to others. And so I think eventually we're all going to have the conversation with the people that are close to us. We've only got a couple more minutes, so I'll...
Yeah,
Okay, yes.
Just a quick comment, and I don't want to oversimplify anything that's been said because everything is very valid here. But during my journey with my crisis, and at the risk of sounding like I'm going to give a standard Sunday school answer here, I ended up sitting down one day and writing a letter to God because I was just so angry and so done with all this crap. And when I did that, it was interesting how I kind of opened the floodgates of a new level of communication there. And one of the things that came to me, and I'm hearing this in my mind as we're having this discussion, and that is that I kept going to other people and to the institution and to the bishops and to the family members to validate what was going on in my heart. And it finally came to me that we can't go there for that validation. So the question of, am I going to sit outside of the temple during one of my children's marriages? The answer to me is likely yes, but I don't need to be in that temple to validate who I am and how God feels about me. And it seemed like when I had that revelation, and that's a strong word, but that's to me what it was, everything shifted and I got to the downward side of the crisis, it felt like. And it changed my perspective. And in one of your slides, you mentioned that looking at the journey, looking at the big picture of your crisis, and you know, books like Eckhart's book really was able to do that for me, and I would recommend it to anyone to be able to step into that big picture and realize that on a conscious level to make that happen.
Thank you. One more comment up here, and then I'm going to give a few closing comments, and then we can figure out lunch or whatever.
Well, I was just wondering, you were talking about how long a person can sustain, you know, maybe the fence sitting. And you talked earlier about your conversations with bishops and other types of people that feel they have a stewardship over you. How long, and I realize it's going to be different for everybody, and I really do need to learn to live in the moment and not, you know, be planning years ahead. But I see myself talking to my bishop and saying, you know, the things that you said, they sound great. That's a wonderful conversation. How long is that going to hold them off before they're back saying, okay, have you had enough space? Can you be the, you know, can you teach in Relief Society now? Can you... you know what I'm saying? Then what's your follow-up? What do you say then at that point? Well, not quite there. Or...
Yeah. You know, it just totally depends on the bishop and your ward and your situation. No one's knocking on my door to have special callings, I can tell you that. I teach the six-year-olds in primary, and I think I'll be there forever unless I ask to step down.
So they don't think you can do too much harm there, is what you're saying.
That's exactly what the bishop said. When I said there are things I would have a hard time teaching, he's like, well, could you handle the six-year-olds and just kind of try and stay away from the controversy with the six-year-olds? And I'm like, yeah, I think I could probably do that. So he gave me the collar. But, yeah, it's hard. It's hard to do this long-term. That's why I no longer say, stay LDS. Now I'm like, that's one tool of many tools that you can consider as it works for you. Okay. Oh, Natasha, we didn't come to... Let's let Natasha end before I end.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just wanted to go back to the comment that you were making. I think out of all the journeys we make in life, and not that it's completely devoid of relationships, because we do have to take into account culture and families and all that, but our spiritual journey is our most individual journey. And I think many times we overstep that bound in our missionary efforts. And whether our missionary effort is to go knocking on all the doors and give them a Book of Mormon, or if it's to go knocking on all the doors of our ward members and give them a copy of No Man Knows My History, it's still that same idea that, you know, I have gotten something in my own spiritual mind and in my journey that now I want to share or teach you. And I have no idea if you are ready or not for either one of those messages. Because I hear people, your comments were so classic because people are saying that on the other side. Well, why didn't anybody tell me about the gospel? You know, why didn't anybody tell me about the Book of Mormon before this? And so it's a very individualized journey for each one of us. And if we can just kind of have a tolerance for that, you know, with each other.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you. Okay. I'm going to end with this. I had a friend named Matt from Microsoft who planted this idea in my mind a long time ago, and I totally dismissed it and ignored it. And his point was, John, I don't believe in the church anymore, and I'm leaving it. But I don't see that as a horrible, tragic thing. And don't think I'm advocating leaving the church, but I'm trying to make a broader point. And he said, but I don't see that as this horrible, terrible thing. My ancestors were pioneers, and they did the best that they could with what they had. They were potato farmers in England, or they were immigrants in Texas, or whatever they were. And when they came across the missionaries and they joined the church, they were following their conscience, following their light, following their truth. And everything that they did, everything that they believed, everything that they brought to me has contributed to who I am today. And I think it's a beautiful and a wonderful thing. But now I am a pioneer. It's scary for me to leave the church. It's not comfortable. It's not something I would choose. It's not something I want to choose. But in many ways, that's got to be like what it was like for them to cross the plains and for them to walk 1,500 miles and for them to bury children along the way. It's tragic. It's difficult. It's uncomfortable. It's sad sometimes. But what a wonderful thing it must have been for them to arrive in the valley. And what a wonderful legacy they've left for me. And maybe some of us aren't going to be able to remain active or true believers in the church. But what if together we can infuse meaning in this journey to carve out spaces for people like us so that our descendants may not have the same church that we had, but maybe we can give them something comparable or even better through our united efforts. And if I ever, you know, as I put myself in the place of contemplating ever leaving the church, I hope that if that's what I end up doing, that that's the perspective and the framework in which I engage that activity. And if I stay in the church, I hope that I'm staying in the church in a way where I'm going to build that room for the doubter and the disbeliever and the heretic in the future, so that when they make that choice, they can choose to be in or out of the church, but maybe can feel some welcome in either place. And I hope that everyone here will consider themselves maybe in that light, and help that give meaning to your journey, so that it's not just, I left the church and I lost out. It's more like, I'm going to carve out something even better for my descendants. And just as a total coincidence, Carolyn Pearson, when I interviewed her last week, she said, there's one thing I want to do before we end, and that's to share a poem called Pioneers. And this will be on the podcast, but I'm going to end with this.
Pioneers. My people were Mormon pioneers. Is the blood still good? Truth flew by like a dove and dropped a feather in the west. Where truth flies, you follow if you are a pioneer. I have searched the skies, and now and then another feather has fallen. I have packed the handcart again, packed it with the precious things and thrown away the rest. I will sing by the fires out there on that uncharted ground, where I am my own captain of tens, where I blow the bugle, bring myself to morning prayer, map out the miles, and never know where or when or if at all I will finally say this is the place. I face the plains on a good day for walking. The sun rises and the mist clears. I will be all right. My people were Mormon pioneers.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to provide feedback, please check us out at mormonstories.org. If you want to help keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider either making a financial contribution or spreading the word about this episode through your blog, Twitter account, Facebook page, family newsletter, or through your ward bulletin and ward newsletter. Just kidding about those last two. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. Check them out at claytonpixton.com or skypixton.com. That's Sky with an E, S-K-Y-E, pixton.com. Thank you.